Hi, this is Kim McMillan, and this is Arts in the Valley, 1480 KYOS AM. My guest today is Fred Reese. He's a Penn Oakland Award-winning author and a stand-up comedian, and he's also just written a nonfiction book called Today, Cancer, Tomorrow, the World. How you doing, Fred?
I'm doing just fine. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, hey, I love that statement, glad to be here. And Fred, I want to say, I watched your cancer, you survive cancer and write about it, and the pictures, you always, no matter what, you always tried to put a positive spin on it.
It's an odd term, positive. That's what I always tell people, because when you think about it, in the medical profession, the term positive is a terrible word.
Oh, God, yes.
Right? And so also when people say, because, I mean, I did different things to get through cancer, because my basic take was you cannot cure yourself, although there's some people that believe that, but they're not going to be around for long, so we won't have to hear them. But the bottom line is that all you have is your life.
Right.
So cancer is a reality check. It's 100% reality. And you have to accept it. You have to accept the fact that, you know what, I'm going to lose my hair, so I'm going to shave my head. I'm going to have to wear a cap, so I'm going to wear a nice cap. Instead of going in depressed, I'm going to come in dressed up like I don't need chemo. I'm going to walk in there proud. It's the best place to go. This is a decision I made, not a choice. A choice is vanilla or chocolate. People say, or, you know, a choice to live. You know, you
right.
can take chemo, or you can eat organic rice and go the Steve Jobs way or the Bob Marley way, not my way. But they'll say, that's a choice. And then go, no. You're so wrong, because choosing whether you want vanilla, chocolate, or strawberry is a choice. To decide whether to live or die is a decision. It is not a choice. And people don't know how they're going to fight until the beast is upon them and trying to pin their last shoulder down. Then they'll want to know, and then they'll know if they've decided to live or die.
You're absolutely right. I have had friends who have had cancer. One decided, I ain't taking no more chemo. He's still alive. But, you know, he tried chemo for a while and did not like it. And he just went in the alternative route. He's been alive for about 20-something years. So,
I'm certain you don't hear the whole truth on that. But sometimes you have no choice. And the bottom line is, like when you said, too, about positive, just to extrapolate a little bit on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said in my book, Today, Cancer, Tomorrow, the World,
right.
You know, I kind of talk on that, like how to but positive is the wrong term, because if you allow for positive, then you have to allow for a negative.
Oh, good
right?
point. Good
right?
point, Fred.
So the thing is, all you are right now, when you're sick, there are only two worlds. There's the world of the healthy, and there's the world of the sick. And you're in the world of the sick. People in the healthy world are talking about their vacations, their 401ks. Monday, they're grumbly. It's back to work. Wednesday is hump day. And you have just one long, endless day of thousands of sunsets and thousands of dawns, and you have to survive in it. And your survival is you're walking through stuff, and you have to take out everything that's in front of you to get back to the world of the healthy. And the way I could best illustrate that, and I talk about that in Today, Cancer, Tomorrow, the World, it's
mm-hmm.
like when you see those nature films and you see a lion that has a zebra in its mouth. Now, everyone sees the zebra, it's still alive, and the lion has flat reflective, its eyes aren't even reflecting anything. And you go, okay, the lion is cancer, you're the zebra, and you're trying to get out of that lion's mouth. And I'll tell you something, when you get out of that lion's mouth, what you're going to be is one giant, mean-spirited, kick-ass, lion-eating zebra. And you're going to come back to that lion, and you're going to rip it apart. You're going to tear it apart. You're going to eat it. You're going to stomp it. You're going to reduce it to ashes, and then you're going to urinate on it. You're going to go, I'm alive, and you, cancer, you're dead. And there's nothing positive about that. That's pure survival, but you can't live like that, but you have to fight cancer like that. That's another world. I wouldn't say take on traffic that way or look at your career that way. If I did, probably I'd make more money. But I'm just talking about the disease right now.
Well, hey, Fred, you gave it a whole nother level of graphicness that I didn't ever thought about. Thank
you. Well, you know, sometimes when you're there, it's one of those things. It can be a blessing and a curse. I saw people come in and they're just chunks of meat. They think, oh, how
right.
could God do this to me? Oh, poor me. And I'm going, you know, you're going the wrong way. First of all, Take a look around you. Look at the people in the chairs. There are people suffering. Are you going to be connected to those people that are suffering? Are you going to try to help them? And what are you really mad at? You can't be mad at your situation. You have to be mad at the cancer. You have to take it that direction. The other way is no good. It's selfish, and it's not connecting to you to a greater strength, you know, and that's why I try to, you know, tap in on today, cancer, tomorrow, the world, because I understand it. Believe me, I've had cancer twice.
Right.
So I had radiation the first time when I was 27, and then at age 57, I had cancer again. So I knew. I remember my wife was talking to me, and mm-hmm. she sees me hanging my head, and she goes, "What's up?" I said, "You know, I'm at the top of a roller coaster, and it's going into a haunted house that's filled with needles and blood."
Yeah.
And she goes, "That's so negative." I go, no. That's real. I know what I'm dealing with. And some people are frightened. They're horrified by facing that. But you have to accept that that's where you're going to go. But the thing is, it's a choice you're making or a decision you're making to get healthy. So all those things, you have decided to have this done to you. Cancer isn't doing this to you. You're trying to heal yourself, and these mm-hmm. are all positive things. Chemo is a positive thing. It's an energy drink. Your weariness and losing your hair and crawling around and being weak and people seeing you as a skeletal form, they have to look at the spirit that's willing to put themselves through that to get back to life. And that's what you got to be seeing when you see people like that. You shouldn't go, "Oh, poor me," or cringe at the sight of their tubes or their stitches or how weak they are. You should admire the strength that's making them endure that so that they can get healthy. And that is a noble act. That's one thing I always hated about Christopher Hitchens' book. He always called it passivity. There's nothing passive about shaving your head. There's nothing passive about getting up early in the morning. There's nothing passive about having a modem stuck in your chest and having them give you chemo. That's action. That's fighting. You're not helpless. You're really doing something. And, you know, if I had a wish, I'd wish that chemotherapy, those rooms weren't separated from the rest of the hospital, so because they make you seem like you're a leper. You should be proud of fighting cancer, you know? That's the way I feel. That's why, you know, like I said, today, cancer, tomorrow, the world. That's what I said, you know, handle that stuff, you know, and find the things within you that you can use. And it's not a self-help thing. I mean, all I can say, it worked for me, you know?
No, and it did. I remember the old pictures. Whenever you took a lot of pictures when you were going through the cancer.
Yes.
And you put them. Well, you want to tell them about your cancer and you know what happened to you in that the first couple of days of finding out, because you posted that too.
Yeah, well, I kept a blog, and the thing was, when I was going through cancer. And all this, it was like I was an antenna, and words and images and things were coming to me.
Right.
And so I was like recording everything, and as well as getting pictures of myself taken during that. And another reason I think that's good is if you have a photograph of something, that means you're going to look back on it as a memory. So it's a positive act.
Right, right.
Right, so you go like, okay. And at the same time, you could share that. So there's something that told me, I said, I'm getting a ball of fire through this, that I'm going to come out of something bigger than me. I'm going to try to get more out of cancer than it can get out of me. But getting back to your original question, you know, like I said, and today, cancer, tomorrow, the world, and just to get a plug out there, just so people know, they can get the book at fredforyourhead.com or at amazon.com.
Right.
And I also have it as an ebook for 99 cents for people that are going through chemo and cancer and are broke. Because I don't want to make money off them. But if they want to give me money and help me get back, fine. But if I can help them when they're broke, that's fine too. You know. But so when I was like, you know, I find out, and you know, I was dispirited. I'm not going to say it was like I was real happy, and I asked to see I was at the Stanford Cancer Center. And just so you know, you got to deal with oncologists that are pretty unfeeling people.
Right.
And you have to advocate for your care, even though they have all the answers and they should give them to you. You have to come in there with some questions, but never be afraid to challenge them. Because my take was, you know, they chose to be an oncologist. I didn't choose to have cancer, so I outranked them. And I always went on that. I'd listen if they were smart. I mean, you got to be reasonable. But anyway, when I was diagnosed, I said, you know, I think I'll go up and look at infusion. Of course, they're not going to call it chemo. They call it infusion, you know.
Right, right.
They don't call it blood marrow transplants. They call it BMT. Fortunately, I did not have to do that. But I saw people who did, and I felt for them. And I walked up, and I got a tour, and I left kind of just helpless. And, you know, like Thoreau had it wrong. It's not the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. It's the mass that makes men lead lives of quiet desperation. And I had a mass inside me that weighed 4 pounds.
Wow.
And I thought about it, and time went by, and I went, you know what? I got to think about this another way. Those chairs in there, those are, it's like a fitness gym. I have to look at this as a place to get stronger. I can't look at this as a place that's pulling me in. I have to look at this as something that I have decided to do, and that it's part of my healing. And that's kind of how I had to approach it and reassemble it. And I said, now, how can I strengthen myself to go in there? First of all, I was very lucky. A lot of good friends, a lot of caregivers. You know, you can't do it alone. And love of other people is definitely a propulsive a power. And in fact, instead of positive or negative, I would say propulsion is the best way to get through cancer. Find the things that propel you forward. And I just, so with my friend's love, it was like I was going in there like the head of a million-man march. I wasn't alone. And the people that are pathetic in their lives and selfish, yeah, they're going to be kicking and screaming the whole way. They kick and scream when they lose their house or their car, or, you know, they don't learn anything. And if they're lucky, if they get out of cancer, they'll learn. However, you go in there, you have love, that's something cancer doesn't have. So you got that one thing. And I thought, what else do I have? I'm 57 years old. I go, you know, I have 57 Freds. For each year of my life, there's a Fred. And I'm going to summon them forth and call them to a meeting, a seance of me. And I'm going to try to remember all the friends I had, the neighbors, the emotions, the girls I dated, the people I had crushes on, the people who liked me. And I said, I'm bringing them all up. And I got my iPod, and I logged in all these tunes that I grew up with at each stage of my life, so that, you know, songs you heard a million times, you know, classic rock albums for me, of course, you know, everything from Jethro Tull to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young to Don McLean's American Pie. I didn't discriminate. I put bad music in with good music, because whatever moved me, that's where I was going.
Right.
And so I said, I'm going to bring that music in with me, and I'm going to talk to those Freds. I'm going to say, look, guys, I know you don't get along. 57 doesn't like looking at 17. 17 doesn't look at 12. I said, but we're all in this together. You guys got to help me. And so I looked through my life and all the people I knew, as well as in my ambitions, my dreams, because I've done stand-up, I've, you know, done radio, I've gotten hired and fired and all this other stuff like everyone else in life. I said, but if I'm going to go in there, everything in my life, I have to stop at the point where love remained, not where dreams became skepticism. I wanted to keep the best of every moment that propelled me forward, and that's all I was thinking about, the things that made me live and the things that I figured. I said, I have to multiply and divide faster than cancer, and I have to believe that I can do that. So.
And you did it.
Yeah, well, so far, you know, not good. You try to stay humble.
Tell us about that 4-pound mass. Where was it?
It was in my pelvic region. They couldn't even see the bulk of my organs, and as a result, it blocked my ureters and my kidneys. One of my kidneys was in bad shape, so I had to wear a nephrostomy bag. So I had catheters in my back, and I had bags on my legs to drain the urine to get the kidneys smaller so that they could handle chemo, which is a toxin, of course, and you have to process it very quickly. But if it stays in the kidneys, it could cause some damage. And so, you know, people would see the bags, and I'd go, you know what? Don't look at these bags like it's a bad thing. Don't look at my tubes like they're a bad thing. I said, these tubes are ropes to climb out of the well of darkness. And these bags on my legs, I said, these are knapsacks to get to the summit. I'm climbing here. You're not seeing what I am. You know, and then I joke about the bags. You know, I put wine labels on them.
Oh, my God, Fred.
I did. There's a picture in the book of me, wine labels. You know, it's called my flush wine. You know, it's like, you know, so I just tried to find something in it because somebody said to me, well, you know, don't you think it's wrong for you to make jokes about cancer? Because at the end of the book, I have tips on how oncologists could be better people, tips on how people can improve their chemo experience, tips on their health, as well as at the end I have jokes about testicular cancer and chemo. And somebody goes, you know, having jokes, don't you think that's bad? And I'm going, you know, you're missing it. Because when life is that serious, cancer is like as real as it gets. And you can be burdened by the seriousness of it, or you can fight it in however different ways you can by remembering your personality. And sometimes when you're decimated and reduced to a bunch of cells and something feeding on you, you forget who you are, and you can't let that happen. You have to remember who you are. And so by doing that, you can draw on that. I mean, it's and you have to. So when you crack a joke, it's like you're saying, you know what? Seriousness tried to make me forget who I was. And I'm not going to allow the seriousness of this situation to make me forget me, because that's all I have to get through this. And the irony is after you go, I know it's an irony. Irony is an intellectual way of saying you're a hypocrite, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you get out of cancer, and you come up. I mean, you're fighting through it. All you have to do is think your own life, and you're fighting. And then once you get through it, you have to let that person go, and at the same time, you really don't mind. Because if you really learned anything, and I include myself in this, that you feel really insignificant. Not in the wonder of because everything's complex or nihilistic or whatever people want to say. You feel that other people are more important and that you want to give more of yourself. And so when you're faced in those situations of your comfort zone versus helping somebody, I'm not saying I'm Mother Teresa. You know, I'll flip somebody off in traffic just as quickly as the next guy once in a while, But you tend to want to give. And the people who don't, I feel sorry for them because their world shrunk. They had a chance to expand, and their world shrunk. And they are pathetic people. And they are like cancer in a sense. They're like the people at work, who always have to exist in a system to suppress you. And ooh. Cancer can only exist in a system. So they're kind of like cancer cells themselves. Cancer beat them. But when you come out of cancer, you can't have it define you. It's like people who are veterans. You know, you see these guys mm-hmm. driving motorcycles with MIA flags, and they're veterans 24/7, you know? And, you know, Veterans Day is one day out of the year, you know? And if you let the battle define you, then the war has won. So you have to say, what got me through that battle? And this is the way I looked at my book. I said, that's why I try to say, what got me through this so that I can give that to you? So you might suffer less, so you might have a better edge, so you might be able to give your oncologist crap if they seem insensitive to you. So that's the way I feel, is that whatever you got through it, whether you're a veteran or somebody with cancer or whatever you got, however you got through that, that's what you should pass on. What drove you there, that should not be you. But how you got through it is something else.
And this is Arts in the Valley. I'm speaking with Fred Rees. He wrote a nonfiction book about his battle with cancer called Today Cancer, Tomorrow the World. Fred, when did you find out that the cancer was completely out of your system?
I found out, I'm out of chemo about a year. Right. And, you know, there are follow-ups after that. And when you're really sick, the thing is, you know you're sick. You physically feel not all together. Right. And I think it's a state of mind in the sense that all of a sudden, you see, when you go to the hospital and you're sick, you blend in with the entire atmosphere. You're one of the, you're taking friendly fire. I mean, you're in this low-lying fog in chemo and walking the hallways. And you're looking at other people who are joking, laughing, eating sandwiches, things you can't do, planning things you can't do. And they're nothing right now. All you're doing is just in this fog. And then when you start to feel better, it's like I walked in the hospital, and I thought, all of a sudden you feel you don't belong there. There's an energy that kind of wells up, this resiliency, and the sense that you go, I don't think it's there. I just don't feel it. And all of a sudden you kind of detach. So the world you were so connected to in the hospital, and the chemo, and the presence, and that low-lying fog just kind of disappears. And you go like, I think I got the edge on this. And it helped when I was going through chemo because the tumor was so large that when I was at the very bottom of my worst treatment, and it's brutal, you know, 4 weeks of 8 hours of chemo and 2.5 weeks in between, and it really takes a toll on you. And I remember when I was at the lowest point with these white blood cells, this stuff that gave me Neulasta, which was wiping me out, and I was like a sinking submarine surrounded by exploding depth charges. And all of a sudden, I felt a movement in my area by my pelvic region. My stomach grumbled, and things were shifting. I went, oh, oh. And I mean, I was starting to cry. I went, oh, it's shrinking.
Wow.
It's shrinking. My organs are moving around. It's shrinking. I'm gaining. As bad as it was, I went like, I'm gaining. And I just knew then. It's like that, and that, man, that just gave me a drive. And you know, I gave my oncologist crap because I said, take these bags off my legs. I'm ready. My tumor shrunk by 60%. And they'll give you crap, you know. And so, I don't think so. I said, well, you know what? I'll tell you what we're going to do. You're going to give me a CT scan, and if my kidneys have shrunk to a certain size, you're taking these bags off so I can run and get stronger to fight what's left of this thing. And she goes, well, I guess we can do that. And I said, well, I guess you will then.
Wow.
You know, and that's how you have to do it. It's like you're cornered, and you go like, no, you got to fight for your life. And it's unfortunate that some oncologists make you fight for your life because they have all the answers. They have seen you're not the only person to come in there with cancer and the type of cancer you have. They know what your side effects are going to be. They know how to relieve your pain, and they should give you preventative medication before you undertake that pain, the sores in your mouth and all the I had so many sores in my mouth that when I tried to eat a banana, the seeds in the banana made the roof of my mouth bleed. You know, I mean, so you're really put in another place. And but you go, like, this is still part of the cure. That's how you have to see it.
Well, last time I saw your picture, you looked like your regular self again. You looked absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you, but I didn't have any testicles. Maybe that added to my glow. No, because I told somebody, I said, you know, now I don't have any testicles, so now I'm officially a registered Democrat.
That's God! You know? Thanks!
That's how you have to look at it.
Oh,
you know?
That's terrible.
And maybe I can aspire to finally do a lotus position, you know. I don't know. But you know, you got to go with what's there, you know, and or what's not there.
Well, you know, people are going to ask you, did you get fake ones put there?
No, I didn't want that. You know, they open you up again. It's not that important to me. And I figure anyone that gets that close to doing something like that to me, I don't think she's going to complain about not finding anything. You know?
No one would complain. You're about the sweetest, most handsome guy that I know.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
It's the truth. So tell me, when you found out
the oncologist, go ahead, spit it out.
I'll just get that name. But when were they surprised that you were correct, is what I'm trying to say.
She jumped back a little bit. You know, like I said, I dug in. You know, it's like a chronicle. Like I said, I talk about that in Today Cancer, Tomorrow the World. I didn't get along with my oncologist. She had, a couple people, you know, that are from India lack some people skills, and they become doctors. And
I
find there's a cultural difference sometimes, and it's nothing about racism. You know, they don't get it. And I don't know if it's cultural the way they grew up, but they have a different value in life and death. And sometimes oncologists do too, because they're not there. The oncology nurses are there for you. They know. They're at your bedside. But these guys and women, they're not. They're writing their studies and their research papers. And, I just said, you know, when they did the test, I was right. My tumor shrunk by 60%, and she was surprised. And I just, you know, stared her down and went, well, I guess I do know something then, don't I?
You know? I'm sure she probably missed you greatly after you were.
Well, you know, the thing is, my take was, hey, I'm going to make it easier for the next guy. In fact, I was nice to her at the end. I said, you know, just once it would have been nice if you called me at home to ask me how I was. Just once it would have been nice when I was going up through chemo, which was only one floor up, to come up to me and ask me how I was. Just once. That would have been a nice thing.
I will say, I don't think it's about race. I think it might have been about that person. But I don't know because I do not have balls, and I have not been operated on. So, but I would hope that is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. I noticed it with other people. I mean, I've heard that. And it's just what you're saying. This is something I ran into a couple times. And to balance it out, there are just as many arrogant people that are graduated with multiple degrees from Stanford University that think they know everything, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's an arrogance that comes with the profession in some respects. And but like I said, you know, they say, why should, they deal with so many people, they have to put up a wall. And I'm going, you know what, they don't mind creating an emotional bond with my money. So if you're taking my money, you're not going, well, you know, Fred's so sick and he doesn't have work, and when he gets out of this, he's going to be broke. I can't take his money. I should just give the money back so that he can get on with his life. No, they're taking that money, and they're going golfing with it or putting it towards a kid's college or having a nice Chardonnay, and good for them. But if you're going to do that, the price of taking my money has an emotional connection with me. So guess what? You have to ask me how I am. Why don't you tell me why you became an oncologist? What do you want out of life? Why are you here?
Fred,
why should you even care? You know?
Fred, maybe.
Gimme.
Fred, maybe you should write a book about oncologists.
Well, they're in there. You know, like I said, I talk about it. I sent a whole list, and I'll say, you know, hey, I didn't have qualms with the treatment, obviously, because I'm still around. But they could have helped me easier on the pain, and there are ways to improve that. And like I said, and Today Cancer, Tomorrow the World, I offer suggestions to oncologists on how to be better people,
as well as,
you know, how people themselves could you know, deal with infusion better in chemo. Like, you know, when I went in, instead of making it clinical, like you're just looking at your chair, you know, bring blankets, bring music, bring photos, decorate your area, define your space, animate it so that people know you're there. You know, don't let anyone reduce you to a specimen.
You know, I actually think that you should be on the lecture circuit at this point, Fred. But we don't have very much time, but I want to give your website, fredforyourhead.com.
Yes, fredforyourhead.com. They can get the book there. they can find information on going to the WordPress, where I have a blog. If they go on YouTube, they can see some readings I've done. They can also see an interview that was done on TV where I talk about this. They can see some of the pictures I went through with cancer. Like I said, the book is available at Amazon. It's also available at fredforyourhead.com, Today Cancer, Tomorrow the World. And for those that are suffering, like I said, I decide I will not make money off those people. I saw them suffering. I know how hard it is to be broke because I'm struggling myself. So I have a 99-cent e-book out there that they can get.
You know, Fred, you're one of the best radio people. I remember you're doing radio in Santa Cruz. You're one of the best radio people I know. I just see that. I want you to go back and do radio. I loved you on the radio.
Well, thank you, but somebody's got to hire me. I'm not, you know, it's pretty tough, and I don't know any, like, there's very little talk radio.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody will hear me. Maybe somebody will say, this guy's got, you know, my take is, and I feel tough for cancer survivors. I'm along with them, too. It's a stigma, and I own cancer. I own up to what I have. I'm not ashamed of it. And they should be out there. If you survive cancer and you're looking for work, I'm telling people out there listening, you should hire those guys. Because if you have that kind of character to survive cancer, imagine how hard they'll work for you.
And
to change your life and theirs.
That's the truth. Fred, you are magnificent. Your bravery. I remember looking at a picture of you where you looked like you were half dead. Another picture of you, I think I felt like Rocky. Did you do a Rocky lift your hands in the air or something?
Well, that's very true. In fact, when I first, when I was first diagnosed, I actually watched the film Rocky just for one particular scene. And that was at the very beginning. Where Rocky throws that first punch that knocks Apollo Creed down unexpectedly. And I said, you know, that when Rocky threw that, this is a fight. And so, you know, it's like cancer was coming at me, and I had to show it that even though I thought it was going to take me out, that it was going to be a fight. So I said, that punch that I saw Rocky throw, and how exhilarating it was to watch it in the film, and how joyful it was to watch the Apollo Creed drop, I said, I have to have that energy every second of every day and every hour of my life until I knock cancer out. And I got to be throwing that punch every second. And so I went back to that. And like I said, I bought boxing gloves into the hospital, you know, and had them take pictures of me. I didn't Photoshop the stuff you see there.
Yeah.
And I just went, no, I got to be that punch. And it's coming at it every time. I'm not giving up.
And you didn't. And I want to say think about going on the speaking circuit, because you're marvelous. And you're so inspirational.
Well, thank you.
And you're just such an incredible human being.
Well, you know, it's like, well, the thing is, I have to lay kudos to the people that were supportive to me. You know, people say, you know, heroic, and I appreciate the compliments and all that. But look at all the heroes, the caregivers that are there for you, that drive
That's
to the
true.
Hospital, that cry when they see you suffer and try to give you the food you want. I mean, they're the heroes, too, and they're the brave people, too, because they're for you, and they're there for you when you're at your worst or when your life is at its worst, and that's pretty heroic too. And you can have no friends and no life and survive cancer, but you can't survive cancer without friends and have a life.
That's true.
You know, and that's what makes it work, those connections of people. That's the only spell you have that defines your life, really.
Thank you, Fred, and I just so appreciate your talking about something that changed how you see life. You seem as a person just actually more determined to create what you want.
Well, that's largely true. And like I said, that's why I wanted to do that book. I felt there was something magical in the book that was beyond me that somehow I pulled down. And I was joking with people. I said, it's so well written, it looks like I didn't do it.
Well, thank you, Fred, and I hope to hear more from you.
All right. Yeah, well, who knows? Somebody might hire me for something. I don't know. But
well,
just, get the book, and if I can help somebody, that's the main thing. I'm not really too concerned about it.
Excellent. And this is Arts in the Valley.